And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, 4 minutes past nine. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes. How are you all keeping? I really do hope you're very well indeed. It's great to have you on board, and we're here off the back of a really busy weekend. Now, I don't know if at this point you're going, would you ever shut up about stuff at the weekend? Or do you go, wow, this is really nice to hear about because we're all part of the one family and I feel involved. I hope it's the last bit because obviously we wouldn't be here without you guys out there. So just to recap, I'm sure Lee mentioned it. We had a fantastic weekend. On Friday, we're down in Kilkenny at the Lyra Hotel, and it was for the Radio Oscars of Ireland, I suppose is the only way. It's where, you know, RTE, News Talk, Today FM, the locals, the regionals, they're all in the one room competing for prizes. Our election coverage received a Bronze National Award, which was fantastic. And of course, the big story was Oisin Kelly being named the Sports Broadcaster of the Year. A fantastic honour as well. So that was all good. All done and dusted on the way back home. And then, of course, we had the big Highland Radio Customer Services Awards last night. An unbelievable night. You know, over 500 people packed into the Mount Errigal Hotel, who put on a fantastic show, by the way, in terms of the staff and the service and the turnaround and the quality. Unbelievable what they do down there. And we had a great night. In fairness, myself and Gooch with the early start, we just did our bit and left, but I'm sure it went on to the early hours and I'm sure everyone had a great time. And, you know, businesses from all over the county, all different sizes of business, types of businesses, honoured, thanks to tens of thousands of votes from the public and a team of expert judges. And it just was absolutely wonderful to see people getting the credit that they deserve. So a fantastic night all round. And as I say, I won't bore you too much if it is a bore talking about it, but suffice to say, it was a lovely weekend, a successful weekend, and I'm glad it's over. I'm glad to be back to the life of normality. Right, let's have a look at some of the newspapers this morning. Obviously, the Nationals are going to be covering some of them. Jim Gavin pulling out of the presidential election late last night. He had enough. The controversy over the overpayment of rent and whether or not he recognised that or paid it back or not. We had John McAteer lined up to talk about that space anyway. So we'll be chatting to him later and digging into that a little bit more. It raises a lot of interesting questions, doesn't it? Now, ironically, Jim Gavin's still going to be on the ballot paper. You could still vote and elect Jim Gavin if you wanted to. Just because he withdraws, it doesn't mean he's not on the ballot, right? It just means he won't be campaigning to seek your votes. But it just means it's him on the ballot, doesn't want it. You've got Fine Gael's candidate and you've got the independent candidate as well. And how does it go? What's the turnout now? You know, ironically, there's a funny thing could actually happen. You could see maybe the protest, you know, spoil vote getting massive amounts of people voting in that regard and electing, you know, a person maybe they don't want to see elected. Ironically, do you get me? So they could be a person, say Maria Steen, could be very highly represented on the ballot paper, but it means it doesn't matter a jot. It might get the Fine Gael candidate or the independent candidate elected, even though they might not want to have them elected. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, it's all somewhat interesting. I thought the presidential election was a bit of a damp squid, just personally in terms of trying to get excited about it. It hasn't improved much, I don't think. Right, anyway, sorry, the Derry People, Donegal News. As the cleanup operation from Storm Amy continues, the frightening situation experienced by defective concrete block homeowners during the storm has prompted calls for action and support for affected families. And these actions and calls, supports and action were called for after the last storm too. And I think we'll be touching on this a little later on in the programme. But gale force winds once again caused major disruption across the county. And for those living in defective concrete homes, many were left terrified as winds tore through their already crumbling homes. And not to mention many people now that are in mobile homes as well, as they await their home to be rebuilt or their home is unlivable safely. The Derry News this morning. Police are investigating a possible sectarian motive after two people needed hospital treatment following an assault by a group in Derry. Detectives are appealing for information about disorder in the Spencer Road area of the city on Saturday evening. The PSNI said shortly after 10:30 p.m, officers were made aware a number of young people were involved in an altercation in the area. It was also reported an object was thrown at two males who were inside a vehicle. So on to the Nationals, the Irish Times. They've got a picture of how would you describe him? He doesn't look happy anyway. Jim Gavin. Fianna Fáil presidential election candidate Jim Gavin has withdrawn from the presidential election after a bruising week on the campaign trail and questions raised about his time as a landlord in the late 2000s. His decision will cause shockwaves in the race to succeed President Michael D. Higgins, reducing the field to just two candidates, left-wing independent TD Catherine Connolly and Fine Gael's Heather Humphreys. In a statement late last night, the former multi-All-Ireland winning Dublin football manager said he had thought long and hard about the potential impact of the ongoing campaign on the well-being of his family and friends, and he had withdrawn with immediate effect. It comes after questions were raised about an allegation reported by the Irish Independent that a former tenant of his mistakenly overpaid €3,300 in rent for the apartment he previously owned and was never paid back. Mr. Gavin and his wife used to own an apartment in the Sandfield area of Dublin. The report set out how they got into financial difficulty and the property was handed back to the bank with an additional sum added to the mortgage on their Rathfarnham home. Mr. Gavin said during yesterday's televised debate on RTE that he was looking into the matter, and if it happened, I'm very sorry that it happened. I really am, and I will address it. Now, the thing that's quite regrettable is that it's very likely that his team knew this question was coming, and someone suggested that was the approach to take in how to answer that question, to effectively say, well, I don't know if it happened, but if it happened, I'm sorry it happened. And he was probably advised to say that, and that was terrible advice. He would have been better addressing it straight out. Now, I'm not questioning whether he did remember it or not. I'm just saying let's presume he did. Obviously, there's also questions now about his selection. I mean, Fianna Fáil had an internal candidate, but their own party leader, Micheál Martin, decided to go full gung-ho in behind Jim Gavin, even though many within his party would have favoured an internal candidate. At what point maybe did Fianna Fáil not sort of dig into it and say, look, is there anything there? Maybe go through company records, maybe get him to fill out a declaration of interests form going back a number of years, you know, because they must have known the papers were going to dig deep, the journalists were going to dig deep, and this may well have come up. So what does it mean for the party as a whole? What does it mean for Micheál Martin? Maybe it means nothing. For Jim Gavin, you know, he's a human being, he's a family man. I kind of feel for him. It must not be very nice for him this morning. But of course, then you might have to feel for the other family who are still awaiting €3,300 from 16 years ago. But a lot of us were in financial crises, but we did try and meet our debts, especially if it was to regular other people. So I don't know. What's your views on all of that? 086 60 25,000. So the attention turns to the budget tomorrow. And the Irish Daily Mail reports that a split is growing in the government over the absence of tax cuts in tomorrow's budget. Despite claims at the top levels that the Taoiseach, Taoiseach and Finance and Spending Ministers were absolutely united, other ministers and TDs were less unified. Instead, complaints were growing within Fianna Fáil over the Faustian deal that saw Fine Gael secure a hospitality VAT reduction at the expense of personal tax cuts. And many were equally unhappy in Fine Gael, with one senior source in the party commenting, there must be a personal tax package, but this is getting qualified by all sorts of things. It is proving to be very difficult. Everything appears to be impossible. Another disgruntled senior Fine Gael member added, the pressure is on Pascal Donoghue. He was told very clearly by numerous deputies at the Fine Gael party meeting that this was not satisfactory. His response was to talk and talk about the savings fund. Taoiseach and party leader Simon Harris is going to have to intervene. This is a long way removed from those who get up early in the morning. Yeah, do you remember? OAP rise, €8 rise for OAP's fuel unease of independence. Another story here. Unease is growing among the Dáil's regional independent group over claims that pensioners will receive a budget increase of as little as €8. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have 86 seats between them, but secured a comfortable majority with the support of the 10 independents. But this is where you get to find out really what this support of independents really means. So if I were an independent supporting the government and, you know, I saw a measly rise for old age pensioners, do I sit in my hands and continue to enjoy sort of the experience of being in government? Or do I go, you know what, enough is enough. There are people here in this country struggling, you know, trying to make ends meet. We need to be doing something more for them. I'm not going to support you anymore. But that doesn't really happen. That's not happening. What is happening, though, the price of your ciggies is going up. If you do smoke, the government's set to increase the price of a packet of cigarettes by 50 cents in tomorrow's budget. The shock move will bring the price of cigarettes up to €18.95 for an average pack like Silkcut or Benson & Hedges, among the highest costs in Europe's... I mean, how is that sustainable for anyone? I know there's a massive increase because there was a report on it last week of people buying cigarettes effectively off the back of a lorry, right? But 20 quid a pack. So, I mean, your average smoker is going to smoke 20, isn't it? So what's 20 by 7, 140 by 4? Oh, my word. It's like 8 or 9 grand a year. And vaping as well, they're putting 50 cent, aren't they, on a milliliter of vape. So those little 10 milliliter bottles, a fiver goes on top of them, whatever they are now, a fiver goes on top of them. And there's going to be an awful lot of, particularly, I think, younger people who are vaping, whether you know it or not, and are going to find it very difficult to feed that nicotine habit, which we know is one of the strongest habits there are out there. A similar increase is expected to be applied on vapes, as I mentioned, which would be on top of this 50 cent a milliliter coming in from November 1st after the new tax was introduced in last year's budget. Okay, so maybe vape juice is going up even more. So what do you think about that? 086 60 25,000. Nice wee story, unless you're a tuner. A woman returned home on holidays from Australia for a visit, landed one of the biggest fish ever caught off the west coast. Aoife McGettigan grew up in the port of Killybegs and often went fishing with her family. But not in her wildest dreams did she even imagine she would one day land a bluefin tuna weighing a whopping 760 pounds. Aoife was out fishing with Killybegs fishing trips on board the Fiona T in recent days when she landed the monster catch. It is the biggest fish that's ever been caught by anyone. I think we might be talking to them at some point. I want to know how they know how much it weighs, because I don't think they landed it. So how do you find that out? Maybe there's some sort of a weighing system on the boat. But anyway, listen, it's a biggie. It's a big fish. I used to think tuna were tiny little things like Sprat because they came in little tins when I was much younger. I must have been about 30. But anyway, they're not. They're massive. The core argument for the exclusion of women from the Catholic priesthoods are... what is that word? I can't read it. Anyway, not realistic. Patronising, I think, is the word. A leading Irish theologian has said. Father Jerry O'Hanlon believes it is time the church stopped beating about the bush and undertook a fair and open re-examination of current teaching on the issue. He noted that the teaching has been rejected by the faithful in many, many parts of the world, including here in Ireland. So effectively what he's saying is that the current stance is patronising. He's a theologian on priesthood and says that, you know, there's no logical reason for the ban on women in the priesthood. And there are still a couple of thousand of you without power. I mean, you know, just credit where it's due to the ESB crews. They were out at 6 o'clock on Friday evening trying to get power restored, and they got the majority of it restored. It really is remarkable what these men and women do. The vast majority around the country of homes without power In the aftermath of Storm Amy, were expected to be reconnected last night. This is from the Irish Daily Star. The state electricity network said only remote and difficult to reach places would remain without power into today. But we are into a nice settled spell of weather now. It is going to be relatively calm, mostly dry for this week and into next weekend as well, and actually into the following week. So if that's the type of weather you like, you're in luck. OK, that was a run through some of the stories in the papers today. Glenveagh National Park is now open to the public with a limited service. The shuttle bus service, castle and tea rooms are open as normal. The Lakeside Walk, Glen Trail and Loch Inser Trail are now fully open. The visitor centre and Nelly's restaurant will remain closed until further notice due to a power outage. So let's get an overview. Beyond that, Dr. Emma Johnson, Regional Manager, Glenveagh National Park, National Parks and Wildlife Service. Good morning, Emmett. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Great to speak to you again.
Yeah, great to have you on. So is this all storm-related or what's the story?
It is, yeah. It's all storm-related. And unfortunately, just the timing of the storm, all of the trees are in full leaf. So we had some, you know, more damage than we would if this came even in January or December when the leaves would be off the trees. So the leaves act as a bit of a sail effect, and that's really resulted in a lot of trees and just branches coming down. And some of them landed on the power income into the visitor centre. So it's been unfortunate, but the staff have worked their socks off really on Saturday and on Sunday to get the place back in order and get us open as far as we could.
Yeah, and I presume this is a mixture of private, in inverted commas, and public infrastructure. So the trees and stuff you have to sort out, do you? Or get in tree surgeons? And are you awaiting the ESB to deal with the power issues? Or what's the setup there?
Yeah, I mean, with regard to the visitor centre, the ESB have told us that power will be back on today. There's quite a lot of conifer forestry that's fallen on the line where it comes into the park. So we hope that that will be up and operational today, and we'll have the afternoon to kind of get the toilets sorted and things, because the electricity runs and pumps all of our water and sewage systems. So it takes a little while for that to come back on stream. And Nelly's restaurant, it's going to take them a day once the power is returned to open again, because they lost a lot of food and stock because the freezers went down. So it'll take a little bit of time to get back up and operational, but we hope that the visitor centre will be open tomorrow. And the following day, Nelly's restaurant will be open.
That's good. And the bounce back from the storm will be quick. And I think people will be understanding of that, Emmett. But it would be remiss of me not to mention the park being brought up at council meetings and in conversations here with members of the tourism industry in terms of, you know, castle visits being not available all week. What's the story there?
Well, today, Monday and Fridays are the days that the castle tours are not operating, and that's due to resources. So they will be operating tomorrow and on our normal schedule. So we're back to our normal schedule, or it's an adjusted schedule, is the way I should put it. But Mondays and Fridays, the castle tours will not be operating. But the other 5 days, they will be operating. And that's the way we've been for a number of months now.
Yeah, indeed. And when you say resources in relation to the Monday and Friday, what is going on there? Is it the fact that you've applied for additional staff, but they haven't been forthcoming? Or how much can you sort of, because there's a great public interest in this, as you can imagine, Emmett. What is the situation as to when you say resources, what is actually going on?
What do I mean by that? We have a lot of interest in it as well, obviously, and it's our aim and our goal to get the castle open 7 days a week as soon as possible. We're very conscious that Glenveagh is the kind of crucial or critical piece of tourism infrastructure in Donegal. And, you know, a high proportion of visitors who come to Donegal visit Glenveagh National Park. So the resources are staffing, basically. We've had another two staff leave in the last couple of months. And really, we're working off a skeleton staff at the moment. And we have an application in, so we have a workforce plan that's been supplied to our senior management in the organisation. It takes time for agreements to be made at senior level, and then for I would just say the public service appointments office to do the interviews.
So how many staff would you say you're short?
Oh, we're down six on the guide side. So that's nearly half and what we require.
Of course, and how it would be the National Parks and Wildlife Service, is it, that would be dealing with staffing situations?
It is, in our parent department as well. And these things take time, so it's not just Glenveagh. Mm-hmm. You know, there are other priorities as well. So the Wildlife Service operates across the whole of Ireland and has a lot of different sites that it needs to operate. And it needs to prioritise.
I can't imagine, and I'm open to correction on this, and it's easy for me to throw this out, but I find it hard to believe that there are other jewel-in-the-crown tourism centres that are only open, you know, 5 days a week because of staffing issues. You can't help but feel that this might be something unique to us here. I'm not saying there aren't staff shortages elsewhere, but really, I can't imagine a place in Kerry being closed 2 days a week, for an example.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to speak to that. I suppose I'm only aware of what we have, the situation here in Donegal. So,
I just want to clarify one question in relation to that, Emmett, because I know there are councillors and others seeking this information. So you're effectively six staff down. Has a submission been placed for six staff to be employed, and that's awaiting approval further up the chain? Is that the way we're at the moment?
Yeah, well, I would say that's six staff just on the guide side. So there's several other staff that were down on the operations, so admin, maintenance, and gardening as well, staff. So there's different sections within the park itself.
So if someone leaves, then you can't replace like for like. It's not local. You're reliant.
No.
Okay. So how many staff in total would you say that you are short?
Well, since the last 4 years, we're down 14 staff.
Okay. And it's the National Parks and Wildlife Service that are responsible, is it, for approving posts? Is that right?
Yeah, well, I mean, we are the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
I don't know the answer. I don't know how to phrase the question because I don't know the structure.
No, yeah.
But I want us to be able to make inquiry. So on whom would you be awaiting the approval of the hiring of staff?
Well, it goes through the normal processes, and these decisions are typically dependent on the budget as well, which we're awaiting, which is going to be released this week. Mm. And, you know, it takes a little bit of time for that to filter down to the various different departments and for the decisions to be made then on the workforce planning. So, I mean, it's really it sits at parent department level, but that it takes time for these things to be resolved. And we have done everything we can at a regional level to resolve the issues. And we need to limit the service we have to fit the resources that we have at our disposal at any given time.
Yeah, I hope you understand my motivation for asking these questions is with a view to actually supporting. Not that you necessarily seek the support, but on a local and regional level, not just for, you know, you and the rest of the staff there, but for the tourism industry and others. So it's critical that we get our fair share, in my view, not attributing that remark to you at all. But that's the sort of long-term stuff. In terms of the short-term stuff, which we started with, and I appreciate that, Emmett, we're ongoing to get this sorted very, very quickly. Some stuff open tomorrow, and hopefully by midweek, things will be returned to where they were pre-AMI.
Yeah, I would be very confident that by Wednesday, pretty much all of our services, but potentially the Derrylachan Trail may remain closed a little bit longer. It's just there's a lot of trees down there, and the crews are working on it today. So they opened up the main Glen Trail yesterday. So that was great to get that open. And we had a lot of staff in over the weekend, just really working very hard. And I just want to thank them for all the work they've put in. So I'd say by Wednesday we should be back to where we were pre-AMI, barring any hitches, which can always happen. But power is our main thing, because once the power goes down, mobile signal goes down, toilets, water, all of those things. So we are very dependent on power.
And sorry, this is actually just a curiosity from me. Was it mainly native or non-native trees that you that were lost?
Non-native trees, so, yes. An interesting question, Greg.
Yeah, I was going to say it's part of the program then, really, to some extent. My mind went strangely.
I mean, we're doing our best in Glenveagh. We've a big program of peatland restoration and woodland restoration over the coming years, and you know that all plays its part in the kind of climate equation. And we're doing a good job in Donegal, I think, with regard to nature restoration. We're leading the way in Glenveagh. So in years to come, people will see this as a site that was an example for others to copy across the rest of the country.
Yeah, it is. It's astonishing that people now are spending their careers doing the work that really is part of 100-odd years of work. It's astonishing, really, when you think about it. All right, then, Emmett, thanks so much.
No problem.
Look after yourself. Take care. Cheers. Right, bye-bye. So at least Amy took away the non-native trees. That being said, it took down power lines. So just off the back of that, if you go into Glenveagh, some of it's open, some of it's not open. Should I run through it for you? Glenveagh National Park, open to the public. The shuttle bus, castle and tea rooms are open as normal. The Lakeside Walk, Glen Trail, Loch Insta Trail are now fully open. The visitor centre and Nelly's restaurant, though, will remain closed until further notice due to a power outage, which also limits the public toilets, mobile phone coverage, etc. But they're 14 staff short. They're 6 staff short, wasn't he mentioned, in relation to the hospitality welcoming side of things. 14 in total. So I know, as I say, you know, some TDs, local councillors are sort of querying what's going on here. Well, there you have your information now. What's taking the higher up so long to approve these positions? And also, to if that budget comes out this week, it will let us know effectively what the staffing plan is for, I don't know, I presume it covers the year. So we'll have a fair idea where we're going to be at this time next year when that budget is released. So we'll try and get our hands on that because I think that's going to be critical as well. Welcome back. So, the big political news, Fianna Fáil's Jim Gavin, he's pulled out of the presidential election race. The former Dublin GEA manager is withdrawing with immediate effect. He said recent days have given him cause to reflect. He said he made a mistake which was not keeping with his character and the standards he set himself, and he's now taking steps to address the matter. It comes after reports Mr. Gavin owes a former tenant €3,300, and during a presidential debate yesterday, he said he was looking into the matter but did not have all the information. So listen, at that time in the late noughties, lots of us were under pressure. Lots of us found ourselves falling behind in our payments. Lots of us found our houses effectively having much of the value wiped off them. We probably would remember if someone was knocking on our doors looking for €3,300, but I'd take him at his word. He didn't remember it. But it's a strange one, right? Because there's no campaign, but he's still a candidate. Political pundit Brendan Byrne joins us on the programme now. What a strange day, 24 hours it's been, Brendan. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so what on the face of it then, I think there's a couple of people now have realised that the Irish media, whether it's right or wrong, will dig deep, they will scrutinise and they will try and cut the legs from under you. Jim Gavin has found that out the hard way.
He has, and it's a very personal thing for him and his family, and we have to be conscious of that, and I think it's important to say that at the outset. But that being said, if you're in public life, and those of us that were in public life, we expect that. We expect scrutiny. We expect to be put up there. And it's never the questions that you're asked. It's how you give the answers, I always found, in public life. And I think from listening to Fionnuala Sheehan this morning on Morning Ireland, when he went through some detail of the amount of solicitors' letters and other correspondences that would have been sent to Jim Gavin around that period, made what he said on A Week in Politics yesterday totally untenable. And I think that, in the context of all that went on, I think gives better explanation to why he stood down late last night.
Fianna Fáil is an incredibly well-resourced party in terms of staff, PR people, people that work in all that side of it. And they released a statement themselves effectively saying, this is what he said, we take him at his word, jog on. That, I think, deserves some level of scrutiny as well, because, you know, what kind of... Now, this fella, we have to put it into context too. No one would care if he wasn't running for the presidential election other than the person who was out the €3,300. But do you think the party did enough due diligence in selecting a candidate for one of the highest offices in the country?
Well, I'm not quite sure what the party would have done, but we have to be balanced in that if the party even did due diligence, all they would have been able to ascertain through the land registry is that he, at one occasion, owned a second apartment that he lost by being repossessed by a bank. That's all they would have determined, and indeed for the Irish Independent, they wouldn't have known what they disclosed subsequently were it not for the individual who is owed the money, I would imagine, identified himself to them. So it's easy to say that it's the fault of party or party leadership, but we have to be balanced in the times of GDPR where we are now. Information is not readily available. Personal information certainly isn't. And all they could have determined was that he had a second property. And beyond that, they couldn't have determined anything else unless there was a disclosure to them.
I wonder what Billy Kelleher would be feeling today.
I was listening to Billy Kelleher as it's on my way to Dublin travelling.
Okay. Yeah, what did he have to say?
I was listening to him on Morning Ireland. Of course, he is annoyed for the party that, as you correctly said, that due diligence and proper investigation, proper probing wasn't done. He's not at all happy either that there was pressure asserted on the members that decided this, because this was decided by TDs and senators, and that the process surrounding how candidates are selected by Fianna Fáil wasn't accessible, fair or balanced in his view. And they're all legitimate points, and points that I think will be debated over the next 3 to 4 days intensely within the party and maybe external to the party too.
What does this mean, if anything, for Micheál Martin, who came out and backed Jim Gavin right from the get-go? And I think really, after, is this going to be a story that's forgotten in 2 or 3 weeks? Maybe it has no material impact on him.
Well, I'd probably paraphrase Charlie Haughey in the 80s when he said some of these Chinese leaders go on into their 90s. And that was a philosophy of Fianna Fáil. We don't change leaders within the party that readily. That being said, I think there's a lot of hurt there. I know from speaking to former colleagues, as I'm no longer a member of the party, but speaking to former colleagues, they were out canvassing, putting up posters, doing what you do if you're a member of a party. There is a lot of hurt and anger there. How that is dealt with within a leadership level, within a parliamentary party level, over the next 48 hours will be critical to see how this is handled. And if it's handled properly, then I think it'll go away. If it's mishandled again, then it'll become a bigger issue.
And of course, you have to factor into some disquiet with the budget as well at this time in this week, in terms of, you know, cost of living packages. It's not going to be a great week for your average voter to sort of feel enamoured with Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael potentially.
But if you're in politics, or in particular if you're in government, you must realise not every day is going to be a sunshine day. We have to be financially responsible. I'm around long enough to know what happened in 2008, 9 and 10 when we should have been financially responsible. We weren't. Are we going to repeat that now? So we have to have restraint. Otherwise, we will have twice the pain in years to come.
Right. So
there
what
is a global tightening.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Brendan. Yeah.
There is a global tightening. If you look at, I think America is going to enter into recession. It's got net unemployment. We're not immune to that. I think you're probably within a year of the IMF going into the United Kingdom. They're in a state of collapse. They probably are where we were in 2010 and 2011. And an open economy such as Ireland is not immune from that. So we need to be responsible. It's easy to dish out money. It's the easiest thing to do, and you'll be popular. But there's a day of reckoning. We learned that hard way.
But I do take the point. But we are dishing out money to developers, and we are dishing out money to those in the hospitality industry. I'm not saying whether they're right or wrong, but
the greatest crisis in my lifetime, and I'm only 52, is the housing crisis. And we have learned the lesson. We've demonized developers for the last 15, 16 years. We've demonized them in this country as if they were pariahs. We have a need of 300,000 houses over the next 15 years. They will not be built unless you have developers. And I think the populism of demonizing developers or any kind of trigger or stimulus mechanism to get houses built has to stop. We can't have both sides of the argument.
We have this strange election now whereby you've got a mass movement calling for people adding a name that's not on the ballot, right, or spoiling the vote. I mean, in reality, I don't know how many people will actually bother to go out and do that. Maybe it'll be a big number, I don't know. And then we have Jim Gavin on there who will be on the ballot and you can vote for him. Theoretically, he could be elected president, right? But he's not yes. got a campaign to back that up. And then, of course, we've got two other candidates who do seek the position. It's a bizarre little situation we found ourselves yes. in.
It is, but anyone that's advocating to go out and spoil your vote by putting in the name of a candidate that's not a bona fide, certified, registered candidate, that's a nonsense. That is nonsensical. You either vote for the candidates that are on the ballot paper, and you're absolutely correct. Theoretically, Jim Gavin can get elected. If you vote one for him and two for any of the other two remaining candidates, it'll transfer to them. So, look, we need to be sensible. It's populist to say, I'm going to vote for whoever because he or she weren't selected. That's a nonsense. If that's the way you're inclined, then stay at home because you're not exercising the franchise whatsoever.
Actually, what you probably are doing, what you are doing is say, for instance, you were very opposed to Heather Humphreys being elected president. You are gifting her the presidency, potentially. Do you know what I mean? That's what I don't get the logic of it. And I'm not anti Heather Humphreys. There's not enough people in there to give different examples to. So why do you understand the logic here? Because people are going, well, they haven't printed the ballot paper yet. Why can't they just print it without his name on it?
Well, the laws govern the elections of any office in this country are very strict and they're independent of politics. Once the returning officer certified the candidacies on the particular day, I forget the date off the top of my head, then that is it. There is no reversal of that. Even if it went to the Supreme Court, there's a non-reversal of that. I have seen in my lifetime three elections in which there have been candidates on the ballot paper that are deceased because they died between certification of candidacy and the day of election. So the law is very clear. We're not like the United States where a district court or for a state court or whatever court in between the Court of Appeal can take you off the ballot. Thankfully, we have much more robust and transparent electoral law in this country that's probably one of the best in Western Europe. But that comes as a price. The price is there's a candidate on that ballot paper who is withdrawn from the effective campaign, and that's all he can do. He's still a candidate, and he will still be there on a choice on our ballot paper the day that we vote on the 24th of October.
All right, Brendan, thank you for your insight. Take care. That is Brendan Byrne there. We will be getting more reaction to this after we take a break. We've tried a number of Fianna Fáil representatives in Donegal this morning in relation to Jim Gavin's resignation. TD senators and councillors, they either said no or they haven't answered. Right, Dr. Joe Kelly, good morning to you.
Good morning, Monty. Good morning, the luck day, Chester. Good morning to yourself and all listening in Highland Radio.
Right, what's your reaction to this bombshell, really, I suppose? And it's a bombshell in the context of what was kind of an uninspiring for many sort of election heretofore. But what's your reaction to the news?
Well, we've spoken before and we've done two programmes, one on democracy and one on the nature of a republic. And in both those programmes, I expressed my deep, deep concern that Ireland was heading more towards a dictatorship than a democracy and a republic. And here now we have it before us, that we have a clampdown by the political elite, particularly Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, where they put the party before the people. And, you know, Brendan, I have to agree.
I don't know if you can slightly move position, Joe. The phone line's breaking up a little bit for us, but you were just about to reference Brendan Byrne's contribution.
Yeah, Brendan, and I don't want to be critical of Brendan, but he talks about if you if you spoil your vote, you're really not exercising your franchise. The reality is that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael give us no choice to exercise our franchise. This is the problem. And Micheál Martin, you know, parachuted in Jim Gavin. And it's not about Jim Gavin. This is about the nature of democracy. And the candidates that were put before us were purely by party politicians. And the party have put themselves before the people. And the politicians in each of those parties have put themselves before the people and not given us
but
a
Joe,
clear
independent,
choice.
Independents over the last, since 1990, there's a far greater representation of independents running for the presidential election than there would be party candidates, right? There's plenty of independents in this country that could have come together and got people on the ballot. It's easy to sort of have a go at Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, but if the independents organise themselves or exercise their interest in democracy, we would be unlikely to be having this conversation. They've put plenty of people on the ballots in the past.
I don't disagree with you, and I'll come to that. But primarily in this instance, it's Jim Gavin and it's Fianna Fáil and Micheál Martin. Micheál Martin has to resign. And the three elected government politicians and senators that we have in Donegal need to let us know, are they standing behind Micheál Martin or are they standing behind the people?
Why do you think he needs to resign?
Because I think that he has usurped the power. He made a diktat. Like even, and not that I'm backing Bertie Ahern, but Bertie Ahern wasn't even given a listening. And in honesty, Bertie Ahern has done some service to the state. In honesty, Bertie Ahern did a lot for the peace process. There's no doubt about that. Now, there are other questions, obviously, about Bertie Ahern, but he wasn't even given a listening by Fianna Fáil. Neither was Mary Hanafin, a reputable politician who was a minister for education.
I just feel that when you sort of, the charges that you've laid at Micheál Martin and others, and then tentatively go sort of backing Bertie Ahern to some extent, you might be losing the room a little bit there.
But it's not that I'm trying to win the room. It's what I'm trying to do is protect democracy and be the voice of democracy. I personally don't care who Fianna Fáil put up. That is their choice. But what I do care is the process that they forced this upon us. They told us we couldn't have the candidate we wanted, but their candidate, and they didn't even vet their own candidate. I mean, the irony of that. Now, not just to leave it all at Fianna Fáil's door,
but I think Simon Harris closed down
the council.
Of course, but two independents could have backed Maria Steen to put her on the ballot. They could have, but they didn't.
Yeah, that's what. But I'm dealing with Jim Gavin first and the mess we're in. Do you honestly think that Fianna Fáil voters are now inclined to go out and vote? I'm going to vote for Fine Gael. I don't think that's going to happen. I think a lot of the Fianna Fáil voter is going to stay at home and you're going to see a very low turnout. But back to the independents. Yes, we have 31 local authorities that could have nominated a presidential candidate, and it's in the constitution that they have this unique right that a radio presenter or a teacher or a doctor or a plumber, none of us have that right other than an IRTHS member and a county council. And only four county councils in Ireland. So the other 27 refuse to exercise that democratic right. And Donegal County Councillors, if they come on your show at any time in the next year, you should be challenging them. The media having
But at the end of the day, I'm not being defensive. No, sorry, Joe, that's not my.
I'm not attacking you.
No, I know that. Sorry, that's not where I was going with it. But like, of course, we'll ask them the question. But like, the truth is that. You know, maybe a lot of people sought a nomination from council, but maybe there were two, possibly three, that were serious candidates, if I dare put it like that. But, you know, maybe given the nature of independent politics, their views didn't align with the independent councillors and they were voted by the people. And maybe they thought, you know, we can't back this particular candidate because it doesn't align with what we think. Why should we take the moral high ground? As opposed to Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil. Sinn Féin could have had someone on the ballot paper, for crying out loud.
Well, here's the point that I'm trying to make, and I agree with what you're saying, but the County Council of Donegal didn't even meet to discuss whether they would nominate someone and even to investigate who these candidates might be.
True.
Kerry County Council did an interview process. They didn't even do that. They just washed their hands of it. And my point is this, either use it or lose it, ladies and gents. I think the Donegal County Councillors should be telling us out straight in future before the election. Tell us the truth. You're not going to back somebody for the presidential race. Democracy is such that, you know, opposition is, there's nothing wrong with an opposition and people that disagree with you. If you, in a healthy democracy, I would welcome people that oppose my view. Mm. I'm strong enough to stand in my own view, and if somebody else is opposing me, good luck to them and let them stand in their view.
I mean,
democracy is where we allow people to have a voice.
But I did see some independents and 100% redress, for instance, backing Catherine Connolly. They were with Catherine Connolly when she was in Donegal. So why would they, if they've said, right, we like this woman, she appeals to us, then why would they facilitate someone who might reduce her chances of being elected? I understand why they should, but why actually should they, if you know where I'm coming from, briefly, in a minute.
So they're telling us that they are democratic only if it works for them. And that's what Fianna Fáil have done, and that's what Fine Gael have done. We're Democrats long as you give us the choice that we're giving you to pick from.
Mm.
Look, a true Democrat, and the evidence is, for example, Marion Harkin, who signed the papers for Marie Stein, the Healy Rays, both of them signed it, and they said, look, we're not voting for you, but we're giving you the right to stand. We're going to give you the nomination, even okay. though we're not going to vote for you. And this is the problem. Micheál Martin has tried to usurp, has tried to take control of this presidential campaign, and he has more or less put his desires before the people of Ireland and has made this whole presidential election into a charade. And just one more thing.
Very briefly, Joe.
And there's a month still to go, nearly 3 weeks to go. What should happen if one of these candidates, and the media now are only focusing on two people, should fall again, and you're only left with one candidate? There's going to be no election. I mean, this is a serious deficit in democracy, and clearly the question okay. has to be asked, why have we had such a poor choice, and why have the political elite, in particular Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, have a stranglehold on who can stand
okay.
for the presidency.
Joe,
surely there's something wrong.
Thanks for your time, as always. Dr. Joe Kelly there, back with more after the news.